Wednesday, last is in session. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Jacob, chairman of the boards, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci in the house, and me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Yeah, we are here. You know, we try to be here, well, all the times that you expect us to be here. We appreciate you stopping by. If you're watching on the YouTube, if you're downloading on the Apple or the Spotify, great. Hey, Johnny, remind them now, if you're in Spotify and in the Apple, hey, leave us a review and things like that, because we appreciate that. But Johnny, what are you doing today, man?
Hey, man, it's midweek. You know, I'm just cruising through things, wrapping up my spring term. It's officially the end of a school year here in higher education out in Washington. And so wrapping up the school year and, you know, just got to finish off with a great group of teachers and then on to summer. And you know what we do in summer, Tim?
Get sunburned.
Yeah, you do, man. I don't have to worry about that. But we just get ready to, you know, retool, focus on what we're doing differently for next year, if anything different, and kind of dive into, you know, one of my learning goals for summer this year, Tim, is how can I better teach with AI?
Oh,
about AI. And that kind of leads, you know, our listeners know we've been duking it out about that over the last few weeks, but there's a lot to think about in terms of the changing landscape of not only higher education, but of education, and what kinds of ways we as teachers can, you know, set some learning goals for ourselves and dig in. It's the off season for us, some of us in the summer, and that's when we develop. That's where we grow and come back, you know, for the new season in the fall. So I'm getting ready to set up my summer learning plan, Tim. That's awesome. What's happening this week. Awesome.
Jacob, I got to ask you, I mean, did you take your girlfriend you reminded us about out on a date this weekend?
Yeah, we had a great time. My Japanese AI generated girlfriend, but my phone ran out of batteries at the park, so it kind of fell apart. But it was a great brief moment, Tim.
That was if anybody saw that in the write up of Saturday's show, that was Jacob taking a pop shot at me for making what I called was my digital twin. And Jacob's a little bit worried about, you know, whether or not he's ever going to get the real Tim or not. So, but anyway, so happy though. Great guest today on Classes in Session, Johnny. And Jacob, I was telling you this, you know, we come across guests in ways where at conferences, we, you know, track them on social media, or sometimes other guests say, hey, I really like being on your show. I got this person you guys need to talk to. Well, that's what we have today. And Johnny, you remember the Nerdy Bird twins? Remember that little episode there? Yeah, the Nerdy Bird Show.
And they're my favorites.
They're my favorite. You know, Lisa and Michelle, well, we got a recommendation. Hey, you got to talk to this person that they've been, you know, spending a little bit of time with. Her name is Sophia Mirza. Sophia Mirza, you are here. Welcome to Busted Pencils. We're handing the mic to you, Sophia. And I got a long intro here to reach out. But first, I just want to say, welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you?
How you doing?
Well, okay. So let's get this right in there. She has a master's. She has a master's degree in education. She stepped into the classroom ready to inspire, but she quickly found that the system often left little room for creativity. Still, she has a deep respect for teachers doing everything they can to engage students in a system that doesn't always make it easy. You, though, Sophia, took a different route. We're going to get on to this, but on that different route, I want to come back to the first part. Student teaching successfully, got your degree, and then made a decision, no. Tell me and Johnny about that, because, you know, we rail against the system, but we're kind of going like, you know, we want to know more. What was it that made you go, yeah, I did this, I'm successful, but now I don't want to do it?
Well, I think there's definitely a disconnect between actual experience and then what you're taught. So application versus what you learn in maybe a school system. So I went to University of Pittsburgh, which was great. It was a great program. And I loved working with students when I got into the student teaching. And I like seeing how excited they got about some of the curriculum or activities, and you got the opportunity to engage with them and build relationships. It was really great. I love them. But then I found out just with that experience, what that environment, like the school environment was actually like. And I felt like my professional experience wasn't really being utilized. Like what I learned in the program was not the same as application and didn't account for the context of being in the school. So teachers have this deep understanding of how students learn. And we are often handed, unfortunately, prescribed curriculum packages. And there's not a lot of room to move there. And not a lot of time to even think about how you might want to change it or customize it for who's in your classroom. So I felt like my role was shifting from an educational designer to maybe just the implementer of someone else's vision that was passed down through administration to me. And I felt like there was a lack of creativity there.
Johnny, what do you think, man?
Man, I mean, you know, Tim, we've heard it before.
And, yeah, we have.
It certainly isn't unique, but it's, you know, I think it's something really important when you are met with those kinds of restrictions and you know that you can do better and you see some of those limitations and you pivot, you evolve, you adapt, you kind of say like, okay, where can I put my efforts towards being supportive of great. Taking what I've done as a great teacher and folding that into the next step. So excited to hear about where that took you, Sophia.
Yeah, we got to say this. And so, you know, let me finish the rest of her introduction. So yeah. After that, she is the founder of Drift 2 Web Solutions. It's a powerhouse in custom web design, SEO, e-commerce, CMS development. But Sophia, you didn't leave education behind because through this work, though, you're doing another form of education. But Sophia, tell us a little bit about the transition from, you know what, I'm not going to be a teacher to an entrepreneur. What experience did you have that moved you to the entrepreneur level? And did anything in teaching help prepare you for taking on the word or the occupation of, which is a really, really kind of anxiety-provoking position to say, I'm going to start my own business, which means entrepreneur. I mean, that takes some courage. Talk to us about the decision to say, you know what, I'm going to be an entrepreneur.
Well, I'm actually a principal there. I mean, I'm one of the co-founders. I'm not the only one. I wasn't alone. And I actually work with a couple of individuals, and they're all from different backgrounds. So we have somebody who is more on the programming side. We have somebody who's more on the project management side. We have somebody who's on the design side. And I'm kind of like a bridge between all those components. And my background, undergrad, I was a psychology major, and I had a minors in statistics and business. And then was actually a COBOL programmer for a little while, things like that. Because why not? Client services, business analyst. And I was like, well, where's the creativity? Where's the, I mean, you can create with code, but it's not the same thing as, you know, something that is a product or a thing or a service. And then I also thought about, you know, going back to working with students. And so I went into the teaching realm. And I felt like there was some stifling of creativity and a lack of attention to what the needs of the students and maybe even the teachers are in that context. So I kind of went from there into something called human-computer interaction. And that blended the psychology and actually the business and client services and all of that, because you have to gather requirements when you're in business and design. So I was able to design new things in new spaces, services, applications, websites across different industries. So I was always dealing with new topics, new industries, new types of people, understanding their businesses, understanding their customers. And it was very creative. And that's what I was looking for.
So that's what brought it together then, is recognizing that. Hey, Johnny, think about this. So, Sophia, that other degree, human design, human computer interaction design.
Yes.
When I pre-interviewed Sophia, I was like, I didn't even know there was a degree in that. And I was thinking about, you know, all of the kind of jibber jabber we've been doing about ed tech and AI and just thinking about this, but that sounds very interesting. And I really, Johnny, tell me about, like, when you hear that, doesn't that sound like something we would like to see teachers maybe interacting with? Human design, computer interaction. Just, you know, I'm going to catch you off guard there, friend.
Yeah, of course, man. Especially if teachers have an affinity towards, like, what role or capacity can those programs or can, you know, we do better in tandem with machines. I think you put me on the spot. I'm just going to give you a simple answer. Like, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Of course. We've had some great stories on the show too of teachers who have, you know, wrote specific programs to program chatbots. I mean, last week you were talking about you created a digital twin, right? And so, but even beyond that, like platforms that interface with their classrooms and help, you know, them do the kind of tailored teaching that they are so, you know, great at doing, or they want to provide for their students. So I think the two go hand in hand. Absolutely. Makes sense. I mean, Sophia is also a testament to something I always tell my teachers that are graduating, is like, you might not realize this, but teacher, you're heavily sought after in industry. And I hate to say that, because I mean, I love saying it because I want all, you know, new teachers out there to know, like, they're choosing to be teachers because they're really great and called to doing that. But you're absolutely not limited to just teaching. You have a skill set. You have great knowledge and interests and abilities that often move beyond just thinking about how we, you know, follow through with a canned curriculum. And so I know a lot of teachers out there who, similar to a little bit of Sophia's story, who feel restricted by that canned curriculum from that, you know, concerted effort to what is called teacher proofing, you know, education, which Tim, we always speak out against. As we talk about that, as, you know, the schooling none of us wanted to be a part of as kids, and especially not as teachers, but it's a reality for a lot of teachers and it really burns you out. Just want to emphasize too, like, look at, like, Sophia is like so many great teachers out there. They have so many skills and they bring that together in innovative ways to strengthen our communities. And so that's another one, Tim. Of course, I see it hand in hand with teachers, because I know that teachers are just unbelievable people in our community who have a vast skill set that if we continue to make their job not fun and not utilize those amazing skills, they're gonna find other amazing ways to enhance our community. So it's a win-win, but it ends up being a loss in schools. But Sophia is certainly not losing out on schools here, because I do see this connected to what so many of us in classrooms and in education need to do. I mean, Tim, you and I have been through the ringer. If we hadn't found Nerdy Bird, we still wouldn't have a website.
Exactly.
These are important things that go hand in hand with good education today.
Sophia.
Yes.
Can you make sense of all of that? I mean, you know, I think about this, the skill set in teaching, you know, if you bring that together, I mean, how, you know, the presentation you talk about, you know, when I love you using the word design and designer. And, you know, for me, I want to see teachers also trying to really see themselves as, I mean, they're designers, or they should be.
Yeah, they should be. And I think it goes back to some of the things I was taught in my program, the human computer interaction program that also applied to education, is making it user-based. Like, who are my people? Who are my students in this case that I'm teaching to? What are their needs? What are their goals? and trying to understand also the teacher. What is the teacher's background? What can they bring to the equation? I don't think those are considered when you're handed a pre-done curriculum. And there's no time also given to the teachers to even modify. Maybe they modify a little bit, but they're kind of constrained by all their other obligations. And there's no reward system in place for, if you even had the time, for if you did it. But in the business world where I'm at now, when I design a product, when I design a service or an application or a website, I can measure the results. I can see if the customers are happier, if there's more traffic to that site, if there's better usability through maybe observational studies. You can't measure, it's not as measured in the student classrooms, in the classrooms of the schools, because the users aren't asked. I mean, how many times have you gotten a survey from your ninth grade teacher saying, were you happy with my performance? Did you like the topics that we learned? What would you like to also learn? No one's in the classroom studying them. Are they, do they seem like they're getting more out of this topic versus that topic, and maybe this method of teaching versus that method of teaching? The measurables aren't there. The metrics aren't there in the same way that they are in the field that I'm in. And that's why often I think when you take industry and you put it into something that's more like this structured environment, sometimes you get a new perspective. And yeah. If you even take from industry more often into the schools, instead of have these artificial barriers of having industry into the schools, you would get some of these insights. But everything's so regulated, everything's so put in place that it's not easy to do that.
No, and you think about it, and Johnny has that too. Let's get into actually what teachers and schools can learn from, your business Drift to Web Solutions. Before we get into that though, Sophia, I want to give you an opportunity though too to just kind of say, so what is it that Drift to Web Solutions, tell us about your business.
So we design across industries. I typically get involved more with actually application design than web design, even though I've done web design, because often with the rise of AI, as you can see, you can create a website. It may not be the best website, but you can create a website potentially and have some kind of website up. But an application usually is something that's a little more out of the box, a little more custom. So understanding who you're targeting, what you're designing for, what the needs are, that's the kind of thing I get involved with. So I use my knowledge across the industries, or I dive into that industry if I don't know it, and understand who their users are, what their industry are, about what their goals are, and design that experience to target what they're after. So it's definitely a creative endeavor. And you take all that research, and here's the magic part where you try to design something. How do we make it better? And then testing it too. So usability and QA is part of that, like iterative testing. Is this design working for users? Is it making things better? Often we use agile methods and iterative methods where we create small components and then test them and then revise based on the observation of those users using it or the feedback. And then we also do A/B testing, which is, okay, well, which is the better design, this design or that design? Let's separate it, see how one performs versus the other. What do we learn from that? So
Johnny, that kind of leads us into the question you put in the chat there then, because I really do, and I don't want to answer this for Sophia, but what can teachers and schools then learn from what you are doing, Sophia, as an entrepreneur, and what you've just talked about there with Drift to Web Solutions and what you're doing?
I mentioned this before, the idea of improving like the communications. I think there's a fundamental problem in most of the educational systems where there's a unidirectional communication model where the curriculum flows down from maybe administrators and policymakers to teachers and students. but there's no feedback traveling up. So how is that being received? What is their feedback? How can we improve on that? I mean, at Drift, we wouldn't design a product that way. There's an iterative loop. Everybody's considered a stakeholder in the end product. So instead, I'd implement maybe a closed feedback loop where we're recognizing all the stakeholders that are involved, particularly the teachers and the students, as co-designers of the educational experience. So we'd start with something we often use called ethnographic research, which helps you understand how students are actually engaging with learning material and then how the teachers can adapt in real time to what is working for those students. And rather than developing a year of curriculum at once, we'd work in those iterative sprints, creating, testing, refining. So for example, let's say I'm creating a science unit for ecosystems. We'd create a rapid prototype. We get into the classroom, observe engagement, comprehension, collect some of that feedback from both the teachers and the students. And the magic happens in the next cycle. We discover maybe the hands-on terrarium activity had more engagement than a reading assignment. But if that's the case, then we expand that approach in the next version and test it again. And we could even do that A-B testing I was talking about to make sure that what we've designed is the best approach. You know, did package A that the team thought worked work better than package B, or did actually package B work better? So importantly, this system would value multiple forms of feedback, not just a test score, but engagement metrics, teacher satisfaction, student interest, classroom dynamics. The iterative approach acknowledges that no curriculum designer can anticipate all the ways that real humans are going to interact with educational content. The only way to create an effective educational experience is designed with your users and not just for your users.
Tony, that's got to be music to your ears, man.
I mean, yeah, I love this. This is what I was kind of getting at a little preemptively in the show here. This is exactly how I see it come together. I mean, there's such a benefit here to be co-designing, right? Like learning experiences and the role, the key role that those are technologically mediated in a lot of our contexts. And so it's like this perfect combination of human and technology coming together to make a whole experience stronger. And it's something that I think sometimes in education, and I'll make a sweeping generalization, probably too many of us are adverse to or feel like it's outside of our wheelhouse. So what a great thing. We got Drift too. We got Sophia, you know, understands this kind of connection and sees this value, and then making it accessible for so many schools and teachers who can potentially tap into this kind of service and resource. I love it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, and Sophia, our time has gone so quickly, but you making that statement about, you know, what can industry offer schools? I think what you've really done here today, especially for our listeners who are going to be mostly educators, is you've kind of said, hey, I'm out here. I'm an entrepreneur. I was a teacher. I've got a business. But I've got some things I could also show you guys. I could be part. Why not invite me in? And boy, that really sounds to me too. Also, like we need to go in that direction. And I hope to see more invitations and to be not to just have you come in and pitch and to just say something, but as you pointed out, co-designers, co-directors. Johnny talks about this part of the community. You're a great asset in your community. How could the community then benefit? So in this sense, the schools, the teachers, the kids, from some of the things that you as an entrepreneur, a co-owner in a business, be able to share with those kids and then share with those teachers. So Sophia, what we always like to say here, though, thanks for busting pencils with us.
Okay.
And now
should I crack a pencil now?
And now it's time for your moment of zen. Everything in history, once it has happened, looks as if it had to happen exactly that way. But I am convinced of the uncertainty of history, of the possibility of surprise, of the importance of human action in changing what looks unchangeable.
Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils Class in Session today with Sophia from Drift 2. And you can always grab great podcasts like this one. Just search Busted Pencils on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, you can always find us on the Civic Media website, or you can get at us at bustedpencils.com. Hey, and don't forget to find us throughout the week, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, with homerooms, class in sessions, and always loads of fun when we wrap up the work week on Fridays with hurdles and home runs. And listen up, you pencil busters. You know you can always catch Busted Pencils broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for an hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.